This is Guy Bogart presenting something of the appreciation, understanding, and better care of cats, the slogan of National Cat Week. Are you still using your seals? They're good for all of the year, keeping the ideal of cats before the world as they peep out from your envelopes, correspondence, and elsewhere with its silent message. It's worth having a part in this National Cat Week family. Sure, cats catch birds the same as humans. Now and then, however, there are incidents in which cats rescue fledglings or injured birds and take them to their hostesses, some call them owners. From Lynn Hamilton's great anthology, Sophisticats, we find the New York poet Rose Noller has recorded such a kitten, Tiger, who changed his stripes. Robin Hood is a cat, you know, and this is the tale I tell. He loved his mother mistress so, could be no parallel. His mother mistress loved the birds. She had some parakeets, canaries, and cadenza words, and other cats for pets. And Robin Hood, intuitive, noted her love that sings. And every spring when fledglings live, he rescued the fluttering wings. He laid them gently at her feet, unharmed, for her kind care. The animal made angels sweet with claws that could forbear. Who said the tiger could not change his one-time stripe and spot? With his mistress, I adore this feline of the tiny cot. Rose Noller. Certainly, this is the exception, but it does happen. If any of you want both cats and birds as guests, pets if you like, in your home, it is simple to have them live in harmony, as I've previously explained. For a review or for new folks in the circle, no harm to repeat. While not all cats will respond, almost all will, aviaries have to maintain cats to protect them from mice, and the cats get along very well among the rooms filled with birds. Easier, of course, if you begin training with a kitten, but much can be taught even to adult cats. Slapping a newspaper is effective, but the best method is the toy water pistol. Let the cat approach the cage, and just as it gets close, squirt a few drops of water. Of course, the cat must not know you are responsible. Just associate the idea of something uncomfortable, but neither painful nor harmful, connected with the act. After a few times, the cat will learn that the birds are not to be molested. And just a few days ago, I saw a cat in a store drinking out of the open goldfish bowl, never thinking of harming the fish. Some hostesses take the bird from the cage and gently peck the cat's nose with the bill. It works, unless you have one of those cats that are exceptional, and there aren't too many such. Now, that will not affect the desire, except in such cases as Miss Noller describes in her poem, of the feline toward the outside birds. More or less success has been achieved, I read, and have no personal knowledge, of cats and outdoor birds getting along. But in the balance of nature, the birds caught by the cat is not a big factor. The cat doesn't raise pigeons and eat the squabs. Guess who does? In this routine, I usually like to remind folks that you never punish a cat or a dog. They do not understand it, and a correction must be made within seconds after the incident, or the little or big guest, pet if you like, has no idea what it is of being corrected for. Sorry to repeat on this program, but sometimes it seems best. Perhaps the most frequent theme in my correspondence from radio and magazines is the note of death of a fur friend. How sweetly appreciative of a little friend who has gone into the next step ahead of us are the lines of another New York poet, also selected by Lynn Hamilton's Sophisticats. Maxine E. Mooney is speaking for each of us in her lines, Epitaph on Budge. If walking down a golden street someday, I shield my eyes to see which mansion in that glittering row has early been prepared for me, I'll know my own, for on its step a yellow cat waits patiently. To what extent should your cat be confined or left to roam? There is no one answer to that question, as some think in their generalizations. It depends on you, on your cat, and the community in which you live. I am not considering the fancy cats now, because they have to be kept under proper restraint for breeding. if all breeders will provide the warm, comfortable quarters like Howard and Blanche W. Warren at her Castle Gattis Cattery in Idlewild, with airy and protected runways all of the year, with the kittens and cats being taken to the house to become familiar with their personalized and individual love, they prosper in their relative confinement. That problem is a specialized one. I'm thinking of the cat lover and his home guests, whether pedigreed or ordinary. To begin with, let's realize the cat is versatile in this matter. By nature, an ancestry, a wide and free-roving entity, it easily adapts itself to apartments where it is both contented and happy. Where possible, on the other hand, give it the greatest possible freedom to run about. Henrietta Hitchcock, whose weekly column in the New York World Telegram and Sun is kindly, understanding, and helpfully, regularly advises against letting the cat outside to do any running about. In such a city as New York and its closely built neighbors, this is wholesome advice. The fatalities run high with city cats like that, and in Southern California, this is often also true. If you want to keep your cat long under such environment, do not let it roam. Yet I've seen lots of Los Angeles homes where there is ample yard space, properly fenced, so the cats can get their proper exercise very well. I lived over 11 years in such a place where the cat exercise was no problem. But there is a large cat population in metropolitan apartments where Miss Hitchcock's advice is wholesome and important. Many of us are fortunate enough to live where our cats can roam freely. Personally, I've always felt the need for room and space and wandering. Born in southern Indiana in the little town of Brookville, I had thousands of acres of native woodland over which I wandered, now unfortunately no longer in existence because of man's misunderstanding greed. Here in Beaumont, there are other thousands of acres of hills over which I still wander, every flower, every vista, every step in adventure, as fresh as in the earliest childhood. And folks, I like also to give the same freedom to my cats as far as possible. For almost 30 years, I have lived in the home in the center of a plot 160 by 200 feet, surrounded by a city street and three alleys. Across those alleys lies all the rest of the block, with friendly neighbors whose dogs and cats freely visit us and who know the Bogart cats and welcome them in their visits. From year to year, their wandering habits varies. For the last few years, the cats stay almost altogether on their own lot, trees, bushes, and purr hall, a converted upside-down carpenter's bench fitted into four rooms with glass windows and adjoining a little enclosure with shade trees and vines where they can find cool spots in the hottest summers and be comfortable in the coldest winters. But they do occasionally go to their friendly neighbors. Those are the purr hall babies. Weather permitting, the outside lights are on, and we sit for an hour together playing, and of course through the day see much of one another. Hildebrand will permit only Penelope in my quarters. For these two, every hour of the year, there is an opening in the window through which they come and go at will, from my bed to the porch roof and down a special ladder always kept for them. All of you can't do that, I know. Demanding wide latitude for myself, naturally my guests have shared the privilege. Whatever your situation, be sure your cat will adapt itself to your environment, will adapt to anything except unkindness. And it is surprising how much of that many will submit to. My only plea is give them every bit of freedom your circumstances will permit. If they must be pretty well confined, take them out regularly into the open. If you have space for your cats to wander, but object to the tattered condition in which occasionally your males show up and the strange litters your mamas present you, the answer is neutering. The neutered cat, male or female, does not change its characteristics or disposition and normally does not become fat and lazy. It will pretty well curtail its wanderings and make a pet so far superior, you will be surprised. Unless you want regular gifts from the great cat, and most cat lovers are not prepared for this delight, animal birth control is a logical answer, and in the long run, cheaper. One point to consider in the fancy breeds and the pedigreed or ordinary, kept pampered and protected in apartments, the adrenal glands are not called into daily action. A racial weakening is developed, and such cats would not go forth in an emergency with ability to hold their own for their race in the fierce fight for survival as those who lead a normal life. But we do not be alarmed at this. It is possible a human race may cease to exist, but we do not fear such a fate for the cat. There will always be plenty of about 20 million years of being, as St. George Mivart so well described, as a genus best adapted of all mammals to meet the demands of life. Let's sum up. If each of you has to weigh your living quarters, your guest cats, your environment, and make your own computation, I just plead as a cat's attorney that you give every break you can to your friends, the felines, who have trusted their fates to your care. Harry Oliver's closing quarter for 1953 of the Desert Rat Scrapbook, they are not dated, and you or your grandchildren or anywhere in between will enjoy them. This is the Don't Fret packet, and centering on page one is a cartoon of his cat Sin, and quite a bit about Sin in the five stiff pages of this only newspaper in America you can open in the wind, as it states, truthfully, though desert rats are not supposed, I understand, to stick always to facts. In my personal relations with them, I've learned to trust them, except in some of their inner history tales. Quite right that the cat of Thousand Palms, down at Old Fort Oliver, should be chosen for this Don't Fret packet, and you'll get the lowdown on Death Valley Scotty. I advise you're buying the Desert Rat Scrapbook four times a year and holding them. Each one is a collector's item and will be valuable always as good library files and as historical assets. Congratulations, Harry. First time you're in Beaumont. I'd like to spend a bit of my time. My friend I.W. Harper lives in the house and is a sociable companion. The Beaumont Harry Oliver Society is headed by druggist Bill King, president, and Guy Bogart, corresponding secretary, if Harry would only correspond. Harry used an English couplet in his paper, which I had clipped and sent to him. The goat that reeks on yonder hill has browsed all day on chlorophyll. May the great cat purr always for you, and cuddle sweetly in your lap, and chase from your pathway the rats of fear and the mice of caution, and help you tear down the walls of doubt to get materials to build a bridge across the abysm of illusion. May she lead you to the oasis of love over the pathway of service under the stars of the desert where realities do not bear the dollar mark, and peace will cover you with the warm blankets of confidence. This is Guy Bogart with love and joy to life, meaning you. Happy purrs.